So a slightly different format this week. We will go over that disappointing result in Johannesburg, but we'll save some time to look ahead to what promises to be an interesting final four rounds of the URC. So without any further ado, it's time to start harping on rugby. My name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to Harping on Rugby, where, with the help of some fellow fans, I get the chance to harp on what's going on with Leinster, Ireland, and the wider rugby world. First up, joining me is someone earning cap number 54. Welcome back to Mr. Conor Cronin.
Thanks a lot for having me back.
No problem at all. And also here is our man on the Great Rock of Gibraltar. This is appearance number 35. Hello to Mr. Rich Mifsud.
Good evening, fellas. Good to be back.
Indeed. Well, that's okay. Listen, let's get this over with. And like I said in our cold open, we're going to try to move at double speed with the timeline this week for obvious reasons. Our feature match of the week was, of course, Emirates Lions v Leinster in round 14 of the 23-24 BKT United Rugby Championship, which was played at the Emirates Airlines Park, better known as Ellis Park, in Johannesburg on Saturday afternoon. The weather was a hot 28 degrees at kickoff time with little or no wind, and of course that good old high veld altitude thrown in for good measure. But to be fair, the Lions didn't really give us enough time to be able to use that as an excuse, Connor.
No, and look, in the build up to this, and there's an awful lot of expectation in the first half of the week, and we'll talk more about all that lovely news from earlier in the week later in the pod. And there is, as I say, the occasion of being in Ellis Park, and it's a massive stadium for South African rugby. Not just the fact that it's got 60,000 seats, but the history of it as a stadium. And as you say, the altitude, and can you tell that I'm trying to stall just a little bit and not really have to talk about this match at all? As it was not fun to watch. I don't know, was it planned or what, but the kickoff dropped beautifully into, you could see the line on the pitch of shade, and it dropped just inside the sunshine. And I don't know if it's the sunshine caught Jenkins' eye and that's why he knocked it on, or the pressure they were putting us under immediately was the reason. But he knocks on anyway, and the ref playing advantage, the Lions go just three phases before a beautiful flat pass puts Creel into space, and it's 3-on-1, and Vandenberg is over for a very, very easy score, and we're less than 40 seconds on the clock. And I had some personal things on yesterday, family event, and I knew I'd get to watch most of the first half. And when that's what you're really watching, you're going, oh, shit, is this what I'm going to have to put up with? And I thought, no, this is okay. We've conceded early in other games. It's not been a big deal. We come back and we fight back and everything goes okay. Not really. Because immediately off the restart, you know, you can see fellas are falling off tackles. You can see fellas are missing tackles. And our first attack, we're really slow to the ruck, and very quickly they've got their first turnover of the day. It's not long after that where we've got the first scrum, and you think, okay, we've got 30 kilos in the scrum on them, surely we get, nope, can't do anything there either. I don't know what was going on in the scrum. The ref certainly didn't. I think with resets and penalties given where maybe they shouldn't have been. I'd love someone like Mark Jackson, who is a scrum expert, to come on and be able to say, actually, here's what was going on there. But I know for certain the referee was not very certain of what was going on. He didn't really know. But anyway, look, scrums were going against us, and that was what led us to 10-0, because it was off a scrum that they got a penalty, which they kicked very conveniently. And then off the restart, you could see there was a little bit of, let's try something, let's see what we can do. But it all comes to nothing. We try for a chip and chase. They gather it. It's two phases, and they're coming from their own 10-meter line. They've got three support runners coming with the man who's got the ball. And now we're 11 minutes in, and we're 15-0 down. They didn't score that conversion, so it stayed 15-0 down. It was just off a lot of, what are we doing here? Why are we doing it? And if the only reason we were doing it was to gift opportunities to the Lions, we were doing a fantastic job of that. Because 2 minutes later, we're trying a loop that gets intercepted. And the parents of the Lions, they do a great job of turning their defense into offense. And they're sprinting over for their third try. And now it's 22-0. And again, we're 15 minutes into the game. And all that thought in my head of, well, it's okay, because even if we concede the first one, we're going to do something great and it's going to rebuild and we're going to get back. And we weren't doing an awful lot good at all. For me, within the first half, in fairness to Max Deegan, he was getting up and disrupting line-out ball a lot. I think in fairness to the halfbacks, they were trying to be creative and trying to make things happen. I think where we've looked at the new defensive system and that sense of, you know, somebody comes rushing up, but he comes rushing up knowing that somebody else will fill the gap he's left behind. Who's not filling the gap? That was a big, big, big problem for me yesterday, particularly in that first half. Who wasn't stepping in? Who wasn't in the line where they were meant to be? Because, you know, you look at those first three tries, and okay, the intercepted loop aside, it all comes down to broken play and fellas not filling in the spots they need to be in. And so tackles are very easily avoided by Lions players to get them down into our end zone three times in 15 minutes. It was bloody awful. I think the other positive, trying to find positives in that first half, is that when we got to our own put in on the scrum, we came away with a penalty at one point for that. So I think maybe if the referee is looking back at the events of the match and looking back at things, he might be wanting to have a look at how a loose head boring in on one side, but on the other side, the loose head driving the tight head off the ball is a penalty for the team who are, the way he put it, show me dominance and I'll give you a penalty. Tell me how that's not dominance. Tell me how Keane Healy driving through their tight head and Thomas Clarkson taking the pressure of the angle that loose head was coming in on, and tell me how that's not dominance. But apparently it wasn't. Look, we've got a few other opportunities that came up. There was a whole section in and around 30, 32 minutes where we got a couple of penalties. It actually led off the scrum and we went into the corner and we get a couple of pick and goes, and there's a few pick and goes happening, and there's some questionable defense, a few offsides, a few people lying all over the ball, an awful lot of coaching. Hands away. No, you can't do that. Like, stop telling them and penalize them. You know, whatever about telling the first man you can't do that, don't tell the second man you can't, penalize them. And it got really frustrating then when you've got the shout of, that's short. Actually, I've changed my mind. That's held up. You know, and maybe there's a push from the player who's got the ball at that stage to try and get over the line. But again, in the build-up, there's a no-arms tackle in there that gets completely ignored. And I think they were living on the edge and they were getting away with it. And I think we should have been doing the same and maybe weren't. Look, we went to the corner again, and once again, it was no good. We couldn't get anywhere. We get driven into touch for one. And on that particular, when they get driven into touch and they threw long, because Max Deegan had been so effective at being disruptive and they want to get out of their own 22, they've thrown it very long and then knock it on. So we get a scrum. We're about 7 meters out. And it was a great one because it had no resets compared to a few of the others. A couple of phases. And then Turner's in space. And he's diving over the line and he dots it down. And I'm like, yeah, here we go. Finally, we're getting our little bit of something, our little bit of a rub of the green or whatever you want to call it. And then the ref says, I think that's knocked on. And he goes to the TMO. And it's a weird conversation. Like, I'm seeing that as knocked on, so no try. And straight away, first playback, we're seeing, well, it's not knocked on, so overrule the decision. And then we've got the TMO looking for other reasons not to award the try. And he claims it's short, and I don't know if it is or not. I'm not sure how clear it can have been. But because the referee has said no try in the first place, it stays no try. We get a scrum. There's a knock on in the build up. Again, I'd love to look. There's another no arms tackle in build up there. And as we get close again, they've kicked clear. We've come back. We're 10 meters out, and then Penny gets really, really isolated. There's no chance for any player to get to him, I don't think, before the Lions are right on top of him, turning it over. But then they knock it on. We get a scrum right on the Hooter. He wore a scrum just before it, so there's a couple of minutes to play on. It's eventually, there's an offside penalty where finally there's a warning for the number of penalties that have built up over the half. And I know we were chatting in the group and saying, well, that's grand. You know, he's given a warning. Surely that will carry over into the second half. Right. Yeah. Look, we went for a tap and go, and it led to nothing but another knock on. And suddenly it's halftime and we're going into the sheds, and it's 22-0. And as close as we've looked to getting, and for all the possession and for all the territory, we've got nothing on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the first time we've sent out. We made as many as like 13 changes, I think it was, from one week to the next. But the thing about Leinster is we're used to a lot of those times, those lineups are planned. So when it comes to training on the Tuesday, like, they're ready for a full week of, you know, day-to-day training, and the team knows who's playing. And by the time it comes to Saturday, they know each other. Now, of course, we had the traveling mixed in this week, so that would have taken a bit of the edge off it, but still, you would have expected the team to be able to play, but they really did play like a team that was thrown together during the week. I think a lot in that first half, especially in the early stages. I mean, like you say, we were hoping to be ahead, or we were hoping to be in it towards the end, because that's when the altitude is going to kick in. But to concede literally on the first, literally from the kickoff, and by contrast, of course, you have the Lions, who, like the South Africans, they're coming into their full season, like what they're used to now. And the Lions, they don't have a lot of Springboks in their team, so they're used to playing together. And they were definitely playing like a team that play all together week in, week out. The support lines, the offload.
People talk about cohesion all the time, that sense of cohesion and why it works for, you know, if you're bringing players in to a national squad, and that sense of cohesion, and you can see it, and you can see how effective it is there for the Lions, you know, because they say they are together all the time. They are consistently playing. Everybody knows what everybody else is going to do.
And I just on that second try. Like,
it was
a turnover, and they immediately stacked. Gone. They had an extra body out wide. And they were able to create that overlap. I mean, it was really well done, to be fair. Well, anyway, listen, that left the score like a very bad looking for us anyway. Lions 22, Leinster 0. But before we return to the pod, just a little reminder of all the different places you'll find us in the Ruggersphere. First of all, we have a radio slot every Friday after the 5 o'clock news on Dublin South 93.9 FM. Then when it comes to online, as well as our main site at harpinrugby.com, we also have a presence on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and new this season, we're on both Threads and Blue Sky. So if you're on any or all of those platforms, please do give us a follow to check out our full range of Leinster and Ireland rugby content. So the one thing we were saying at halftime was that, like Connor was talking about there, the Lions got a warning just before the break. So, and we had the kickoff. So we were hoping that maybe we could, with that control, we could maybe manufacture some time in their 22 in the early stages to hopefully maybe force a penalty, or something, some kind of situation like that. But it just wasn't to be, Rich.
No, not at all. And to be honest, we never looked like doing that, and obviously I'll come on to it in final thoughts on the match, but what was underpinning this performance was a total lack of maturity and composure, that instead of building ourselves into the game, we just gave up after 15 minutes effectively, then started playing catch-up football, and we all know where that goes, and that's how it ended. But anyway, to the wonders of the second half, pretty much a follow-on from what Connor has described so valiantly about the first half performance. And once again, there were an awful lot of ifs and buts. As an example, it's the Foley non-try, which was correctly chalked off by the TMO following a forward pass. When, to be honest, had there been a bit more of a link-up play, a bit more, the funny word, cohesion, perhaps the runner wouldn't have overshot, and hence that wouldn't have been a forward try, because I think we're in anyway if we pass it properly, because we'd created the overlap and we were in. So it was well worked, sadly, with a forward pass. So that is correctly disallowed. They get a pen from an ensuing scrum, obviously, because we on their own 5 meters. They go for touch. Again, another thing to highlight, which has already been highlighted, and that is Deegan, who was probably our best guy in the field on Saturday. You know, at the very least, he carried on attacking and defending, and certainly he made an absolute mess of their lineout on more than one occasion, and pretty much influenced how they played their lineouts, not least with a couple of very short, sharp lineouts right to the front that obviously limits their options. So anyway, play continues. 48th minute, we give away a pen about just beyond the halfway line. And the only reason I raise this because they score, Mohamba scores from all the way back there, is because they invoked Hawkeye, otherwise known as a TMO, to see whether the thing had got over. And that was simply because the ref only saw one of the two flags going up. Only one flag went up from the two ARs. So clearly one of them saw it, the other one didn't. It's pretty evident that it was a very good kick. They are at altitude, hence the distance is never an issue. So 25-0 up. So instead of a reaction from us, certainly on the scoreboard, we end up getting a further 3 points behind. But all was not lost. A few minutes later, we get a scrum pen on the halfway. We got a touch 10 metres out, so on the left side. We get penalty advantage right from the line out, go right. So there's a few carries and passes and loop passes. Then a loose pass from Harry. I don't know, really don't know what he was trying to do there with a flip out the back pass. And you know, and this again highlights the lack of composure, certainly in their 22. And you'd expect, given some of the personnel on show, I'm not talking about Harry here, but I'm talking about some of the other more senior players there, you'd expect them to get a better grip on their colleagues or team members, and I use the word team very loosely, or guardedly, I should say, because we looked anything but a team. But anyway, on this occasion, we managed to regather, or Foley regathers. Eventually, a couple of phases later, Penny is in at scrum half, passes the ball off to Harry, very quick grubber in, Kieran Frawley dots down, we convert. So all of a sudden, 25-7, we all feel a bit better, we feel a bit hopeful, we've come back from worse situations. Was this the momentum shifter? Because I really thought throughout that match that had we put Lions under sustained pressure in the scoreboard, that they were gonna crack. They were there for the taking in some instances. The fact of the matter is we never put them under sufficient pressure for that to come to fruition. And you know, just to underline that point, pretty much off following the kickoff, we actually get a penalty advantage. We get the ball, we carry straight into their 22. They turn it over. So you know, their defense, especially at the breakdown, was as much messy as it was effective, because they kept turning ball over. I think they counteract us once, which led to a try, which I'll come touch upon in a wee bit. But they certainly turned the ball over quite legally without even us giving a penalty away on a few occasions. So they get the ball, we get a pen, we go quickly, we get turned over at the breakdown, just beyond the 10-meter line. The ball gets to Vandenberg, he kicks through. There's absolutely nobody at home for us. And Chituka, who was, well, easily the best man on that pitch and well worth the Player of the Match award, scored following an offload off the ground from his teammate. So all of a sudden, we've scored 25-7 and we go behind 37. So we swapped tries with them. Moving on now into the fourth quarter, we go through a few that, you know, there's a phase of play for about 2 or 3 minutes where we go through a few decent carries, relatively decent build-up play, but a bit too formulaic, too easy for Lions to read. They defend their 22. Manfully, we never get past it, but we had a penalty advantage during the latter stages of that passage of play. We go for the touch 5 meters out, we win the line out. Eventually, we tie them around the area of their posts with a number of carries. We try getting to the line. Then Reese, who by then is on, passes it on to Luke, who and then quick hands basically all the way left through Turner, Sam Prendergast, who also was on, and then on to Kieran Frawley to get his second try. So we don't convert that one, sadly. And then we're on 30-12, by which time we've got 64 minutes gone on the clock. So you look at it, 18 points, still plenty of time to play. You know, a decent Leinster side gets, at the very least, gets there and gets a losing bonus point. But sadly, that was not to be. The next 9 minutes or so of play, it's just a ping pong battle. We give the ball away, they give the ball away, we give the penalty away, they give the penalty away. You know, and pretty much play is in between both 10 meters lines, and nothing much comes of that. They get a scrum. They get penalty advantage from that scrum, and they go to touch near halfway line. But we get a penalty following on from that passage of play on their part. We go for touch about 10 meters out. We maul it through a few phases, and then we get, one of numerous occasions, we get pinged again for holding on because we go beyond the cover. So at this time, we've been in possession along the halfway line. We get counteract again, yet more good defensive play from the Lions. They shift the ball wide very quickly. Cover, once again, is miles away, so much so that they create a 3-on-1. And Chituka scores another lovely try. I mean, it's got to be said. Yes, we were crap defensively, but they took their opportunities extremely well. They transitioned extremely well, very efficient, very effective, and well worth their 37-12 lead at that stage. But it wasn't to be, wasn't to remain that way. Where, you know, with the clock in the red, they'd have the ball, they knock on, we get a scrum in our own 22, and fair play to the lads, they try and go to at least put a little bit of gloss on that scoreboard. But it turns out that the only ones who put some gloss on the scoreboard are Lions, because we give the ball away, we actually give a penalty away, so they're playing with an advantage, they kick the ball through with a little grubber, and it's dotted down and converted as the final kick of the match. 44-12 is the full-time score, and that was delightful.
Yeah, indeed. You definitely did feel at one stage in that second half that there was one, if not even possibly two, bonus points sort of within our reach, if we could at least make something work, especially, you know, with the ball. But it just wasn't happening. The two tries themselves that we got were well worked, but yeah, obviously not enough. And just at the end, I mean, it's like, I was sucking diesel myself at the kickoff in the second half, so I can only imagine what the players were like towards the end. So it was it just wasn't to be. It's all about how they picked themselves up now at this stage. And like we say, important to stress, credit to the Lions. They were like, they were ready to, you know, the way you set up to play a team like Leinster is, listen, we'll get our stuff right, and if they do give us a chance, we take it. And by God, they took it. I mean, some of those tries, a lot of, even if we presented them a team with the same opportunity, there's no guarantee they would go all the way down and score. And they were just ready each and every time. With you mentioned those counter rucks as well; they were strong. Those were backs in one of those counter rucks. I think right, that led to a try. They were all backs doing that, and it was really well worked. And but you say Shishuka, man of the match, totally deserved. And listen, I think we've spoken enough about this anyway. The final score, as you say, was Lions 44, Leinster 12. Well, that result leaves Leinster top of the URC, but we'll be looking ahead to the final four rounds. So I'll quickly round up what went on elsewhere over the weekend first. And I'll go really quickly when it comes to the Irish women, who fell heavily at Twickenham in the Six Nations. But for me anyway, there's no shame for anyone on that team, as the gulf between the levels of professional support between the two sides, it easily accounted for that scoreline. The professionalism of the Red Roses is something Ireland should aspire to, but it'll be a long process. And the hope is that we can at least match last week's performance against Wales when we face Scotland next round. Meanwhile, in the AAL, the finals are now decided, with both taking place at the Aviva Stadium on Sunday, April 28th. It was already decided that UL Bows will face Railway Union in the women's final, while in the men's, Ben Murphy was among the tries for Clontarf in their semi-final, but it wasn't enough, as Cor Conn made the most of home advantage to win 40-34, while at Lakeland's, champions Terranure held off a second-half comeback from Lansdowne to edge them out 31-28, making it two Leinster v Munster's deciders next week at HQ. Now, before we look at the URC run-in, I just want to go quickly over the crazy week that led to Saturday's match. The Leinster Rugby social media team were working overtime with a rake of announcements. If you look back at our podcast feed, you'll see an emergency pod dedicated to everything that was announced by Tuesday lunchtime. Then on our preview pod, Kegel and I went over the rest. But sure, there's no harm getting some more Leinster fan takes. And I'm pretty sure the lads here are dying to talk about something positive. So first with yourself, Connor, what did you make of it all?
Just a mental news week. But you start with a win over the reigning back-to-back European champions and defeating them in what was later referred to as a shameful way. I think that's a very interesting take. I've compared a particular coach a couple of times to Eddie Jones, in the sense that not because I think he's a total arsehole, but because he does a very good job of pulling focus away from the players and onto himself. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here for that. But that aside, and worth noting that I think they had another shameful result yesterday, losing by a point to Cast. But anyway.
Who's counting, from, right?
Yeah, whatever. So it's only 1 point lost, right? They're not that big a deal, right? Yeah,
they don't really count.
I mean, we should know. But we... After that, two central contracts, signing a Geordie Barrett, Tyler Blaindall coming from Hurricanes to be our attack coach with the departure of Andrew Goodman. Like, just mad. Where do you try and keep up with it? Like, anyone, it's kind of difficult because I think because it's Leinster, you know, any other team making this kind of a set of announcements, it'd be like, geez, fair play to them. That's a lot going on for them this week. But it's Leinster. So aren't we all dickheads, and aren't we all arseholes, and aren't we all terrible? And, you know, there's a lot of ABL mentality going out there. And you know what? I don't care.
Definitely. And of course, there was other things as well. Later, it literally went right through the week. And towards the end, we found out that Croke Park had been sold out, which was amazing. I mean, it was just a week full of amazing news, Rich.
It was. And it kept on coming. You kept wondering what else was going to be announced when. So, you know, we had the Geordie Barrett story, and I'd like to touch upon on this a wee bit. I think the very important thing and the huge difference between, and I know that comparisons have quite rightly been drawn as to some of our imports, and with a few exceptions, our imports have been very, very good. You know, all the ones you've mentioned, because to be honest, I can only think of what Kane Douglas, perhaps, who was not quite up to
Stephen,
the standard.
Stephen well.
Sykes.
Sykes, yeah. not up to...
Some Leinster fans out there are going, who? And well, to them we say, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. But all of those players were in the twilight, if not... in the waning years of their particular careers, and certainly no longer heavily involved in the test playing scene. But this guy who's coming, albeit for only 6 months, is at the top of his game. He is an All Black who is playing, and you know, an All Black who is pretty much scheduled to be there for the next World Cup for them.
Yep, he re-signed for them at the same time.
That is a huge difference. Also, the fact that he was quite willing to take a pay cut instead of going to Japan to come to Leinster, only because he wants to play for Meath GAA, obviously. But that's a hat tip to Tom, of course. But you know, and I think that is a pivotal difference, and that is I think I may be completely wrong, but that's some of the attraction that somebody like Jacques Nienaber has. This is a double World Cup winning coach. These are the kinds of coaches that players want to be coached by, because clearly they've been doing something pretty damn well to win the World Cup on two occasions back to back. So this is very, very good. I mean, you know, Snyman, obviously, who's coming along next season, it's building up to be quite a substantial team for next season. We haven't even finished this one. I'm already excited about the next. So, you know, I just wanted to make that point that Jordy Barrett isn't one of these people who's coming here to see out the end of his career. No. And those that have been bloody awesome, as Connor's just mentioned. But this is a guy who's on the up. This is a guy who wants to come to us to learn. And, you know, he said this quite clearly. That speaks volumes for the Leinster system and speaks volumes for the player involved. Apart from that, all the other news, you know, Connor's already touched upon it. The Croke Park sellout, I mean, that's going to be massive, absolutely massive, not least from a revenue perspective. Although I don't know what the thingy is with, you know, what the split is with the EPCR. But you know, to fill a stadium of 83,000 pretty much people, I mean, that says something. You know, it's been a massive week. To be honest, I would have been quite happy trundling along this week with just, you know, living off the exhaust fumes of the La Rochelle win.
I know. By the time it got to Friday, that result was almost a distant memory at that stage. So much going through every day in the news cycle. I mean, of course, one announcement in there we didn't touch on, well, you touched on it a bit, actually, was that we're moving next season to the Aviva. Now, that's going to cause, there's going to be a little bit of fine print to that with some fans with their regular season ticket seats. Yeah. They're moving over. They're not going to transfer. So that's going to bring up
some. It's more than just a little complicated. We've looked into it because, you know, there's a bunch of us that sit together, and basically Lesro was saying you'll have to buy all the tickets at the same time on one account, and then we'll just divvy them out afterwards. But the downside of that is I'll have those moments where, you know, at 3 o'clock kickoff, and I'm thinking, oh, brilliant, I'll bring the kids. But where I sit in the south stand, and it's free seating. And now I'm going to be in a situation where, unless I know for certain the last four games, there's been nobody sitting in those seats, I can buy those seats in front of me or whatever. It's going to get a bit difficult for people who want to bring families, who want to do a bit more, who want to, you know, these things we can do with the RDS at the moment. And we'll be able to do again afterwards, I hope. But it is a little bit complicated and a bit messy. As you say, the fine print is a little difficult.
But overall, a net positive. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, the fine print in Croker is worse because I've got friends with quite a young child and they were thinking, great, we'll go and we'll bring our young baby in her little pouch. Not without a ticket, you won't. That young baby needs a ticket. And they're not taking a seat. They're not occupying any space, but they have to have a ticket. And that's a stadium rule as opposed to EPCR or anything else. So a couple of matches next year in Croker, people need to be a little bit aware of those things, of making sure that if you're bringing your family, if you're bringing small kids, everybody's got to have a ticket.
Okay, well, that's definitely something to consider. All right, but listen, like you say, it was a net positive anyway with all those announcements, and it was good to have something positive to talk about in regards to the rugby over the past 7 or 8 days. But listen, for now, we're going to go back to the URC. And have a look at just how the run-in is looking for all the teams. We're going to have a sort of a quick, wide look across the league and the remaining matches and how the league is set up. Now, there are four rounds of matches left, and I make it 11 teams still in realistic contention for a top eight finish, and possibly four teams in realistic contention for a top two finish. So we've kind of divided the league up into three blocks, and we'll work our way up from the bottom, where there are five clubs down there that can really only serve as spoilers in the final rounds, I suppose. In those five teams, there's a couple of teams we're not so surprised to see there, but there might be. I'll just throw this open to the lads. We've got Zebra, Dragons, Scarlets, Sharks, and Cardiff, kind of a mixed kind of bag of teams down there that are really out of contention.
Yeah, I think it's surprising to see Sharks down there. I think that's the one that's really going to make people sit up and go, wow, what the hell has gone wrong for them this season? You look at the quality they have across their entire team and you can only wonder how they're so far down. Now look, they've got the advantage of three home games at the end, but they're against teams who currently are all ahead of them in the table. It's been a tough season for them. I think the one thing for all of those teams, whether it's Zebra, who are languishing down the bottom, barely behind Dragons, only on points difference, or whether you're talking about Sharks or Scarlets or whoever, the one thing I would want to see from every single one of those teams is, you know, no rolling over, no quitting at this time of the year, no looking and saying, geez, it's only 3 weeks to holidays, boys, you know, we'll just get through this. I want to see them fighting every way through each of those games, particularly, not going to lie, from a personal point of view, I'd particularly like to see Zebra be very competitive against Glasgow in either of their two games that they have against them in the next 4 weeks. But it's not fun to be towards the end of a table. And I know mentally that'll be quite difficult for some players, but it's up to the coaches to ensure that they're going out and giving a good representation of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not really, I mean, I suppose we've talked a lot about what's been going on in Welsh rugby in recent times and this season as well. And to see three, not one, not two, but three of their teams in that kind of block, it's not a good look, Rich.
No, it isn't. And, you know, just symptomatic of the problems that they have as a whole. Quite, you know, contrasting totally to the way that the IRFU deals with rugby in Ireland. This is looking at that and saying, no, we're not going to do that, which is the right way to do it. Pretty much a very well orchestrated and well managed and well organized way to do it. We shall do it completely differently, and we shall, you know, embark on a pathway of chaos. And, you know, you reap what you sow. And they've been doing this for years. This is just, it's sad because, you know, the Welsh are a very proud nation. They're very proud rugby nation, and yet they have been sold short by their own union, but who, you know, I mean, let's face it, they are completely to blame for their mismanagement of the union, the way they've kept forcing the issue, pretty much forcing the regions to continue to be in a position where they think they're not, but they think that they are caught betwixt and between, and that they really, really, really want to play in the Premiership with jointly with the English, where they'd get mullered anyway.
Going to the Premiership, and you look where three of the Premiership teams made the quarterfinals, and now we're looking at a situation where if they're lucky, one of their teams might qualify for Champions Cup rugby next year.
Absolutely.
It's delusional to think they could make a big difference going to the Premiership. And the only difference it would make is financial, because they're driving instead of flying.
Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Besides, I don't know if it's fair to say that it's the WRU's responsibility, because according to their social media, it was the referee at the Kingspan the other night that he's responsible for what happened. So, I mean, you know, you got to listen to both sides of the argument, you know.
It's a conspiracy. It's an absolute conspiracy. And I'm sorry for the Welsh Rugby Union to say that. I want to see a sanction for that set of comments. That the idea that the ref and the TMO would somehow contrive a situation that if it was reversed, you know, if it was a case of an Ulster player knocks it on and scores a try, you're telling me you wouldn't want it to come back? You know, it's that was an absolute nonsense piece of, I was going to call it journalism. It's not. It's a press release. It's a statement from your official union. It's outrageous.
Yeah. It should be having nothing to do with any of that. But we'll see what happens. Like we say, World Rugby is really hot and should always be hot on referees, attitudes towards referees, especially in social media. So we'll see if anything happens. But that's kind of a separate issue. But like you say, in that block of teams, which are kind of, I see 14 points adrift of those above them. There's three Welsh teams, and of course Zebra at the bottom and the Sharks. So that's, I think we've covered them pretty much enough there. So that moves us up to the middle block, and here is where about a million different things can happen, since Benetton in fifth place and the Lions in 11th, between them there's just 3 points, with both Ulster and Connacht are very much in the mix there now. So that's where a lot can happen, and you know, a lot of them will be playing each other. Pretty much every match is going to count for the next four rounds.
I think that, you know, as much as I said, Ospreys might be lucky, I think they are the ones going to benefit most from this run of matches. They've got the Bulls away, having just beaten Stormers. I don't think they can do the double there, but they've got the Bulls away, and then they're away to us. But then they've got Dragons in Cardiff. And there's, they'll be looking at that and they'll be targeting 10 match points for that and maybe come away with 9 across those two games. And if they can get even 1 point out of us or the Bulls, that's what's going to keep them, I think, in knockout rugby. And then I think on the flip side of that, I think Ulster are going to suffer the next few weeks because they've Benetton, followed by, okay, they've got Scarlets then, but then they've got Leinster and Munster. And I don't see how on current form they can beat anyone there except Scarlets. Now, look, we all know if they come with the right attitude, if they're switched on, if they've got their game plan right, Ulster can be a very, very dangerous side. But it looks very forlorn up there. It looks very like they're just kind of all over the place. They don't know what to do. They don't know why to do it. They're making bad choices on the pitch. There's been a lot of difficulty and a lot of upheaval. I really hope they can get everything sorted because, you know, again, I know Keogh has said it many times about Munster, but it's true of all provinces. You know, a strong Ulster helps us have a strong Ireland, a strong Connacht, a strong Munster. I really want to see Ulster do better, but I'm struggling to see how they'll get through and still be able to qualify for knockout rugby. And then the only other one that's worth a quick mention for me is Benetton. Benetton will have a tough last couple of games with Bulls and Edinburgh. I think they should have enough to go to win against Ulster and the Sharks. But it'll be great to see Benetton in knockout rugby and see, again, they've invested heavily in grassroots over the last number of years. And now we're getting the fruition of that. So it'd be good to see an Italian side. You know, if we get a side from each of the nations into knockout rugby, that just demonstrates how competitive the league is.
Yeah. And what about yourself, Rich? There's other teams in there as well. The Lions and the Stormers are in the mix there.
Yeah. And you know, I'd like to pick up where Connor just left off. And historically, the Celtic League, Pro 12, Pro 14, BKT, URC, whatever you want to call it, in whichever one of its manifestations over the years has been, as you look at it from the outside in, a Mickey Mouse league, pretty much. Because if you're looking at it from the Premiership or the Top 14, you're looking at it with a certain or a great degree of condescension. I think that the fact that 1 point separates six sides, 3 points separates seven sides, 5 points separates eight sides, says an awful lot about this league. It's extremely competitive. If you're not up for your game, just ask us. If you're not up for your game, you're going to get stuffed because the quality of the league has improved exponentially. Okay, perhaps not necessarily across the piece. And by across the piece, I mean the Welsh sides, I think, have not been up to it. Can you imagine if we were still talking about a very strong Scarlets, a very strong Cardiff, a very strong Dragons and Ospreys? This would be an incredibly tough bastard of a league to win. Sadly, from their perspective, those teams are not up at the races at the moment. But, you know, that middle block of teams, it's so congested in there that it's going to make the last four games or four sets of fixtures until the end of the regular season very, very interesting from whichever perspective you want to view it. And neither Warriors nor ourselves are a million miles away ahead of this chasing pack.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So, you know, any slip-ups, and very quickly, those teams, if they get bonus point wins, what have you, they'll charge up that ladder. So yeah. Even Lions, who are down there on 39 points, they get a good run of games. They get 20 match points, which is not beyond them. You know, that puts them on 59 points all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's...
there's a lot that can happen. I mean, I've divvied them up I've divvied them up kind of into three blocks as if they're kind of mutually exclusive, but there's definitely some scope. There's still some scope for that middle block to even break in and get that home quarterfinal top four for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like you say, if those top teams slip up, but let's have a look at that top four now. Leinster now, even despite that disappointing defeat in Joburg, still in first place with 54 points, but just one ahead of Glasgow now, who still have to play the bottom club Zebra twice. Although they do have to play at the Bulls, who are also in the mix, and they play them in round 16. And of course, at this time of year, we all know we can never rule out Munster, whose win in Pretoria will give them absolutely no fear in those final rounds. So lads, listen, we have Stormers away next week, Ospreys at home, then finally two Interpros with Ulster at the Kingspan before finishing up against Connacht at the RDS. How do we see it?
I think for us, Stormers will be tough. If we could come away with a point there, knowing that Glasgow have the Bulls and the Lions to play, that would be a little more reassuring. I think the Bulls with their three home games coming into the end of the season, if you turned around and said, yeah, Leinster are going to have three home games in the last four home games in the last five at the end of the season. Sure, it's a conspiracy and it's all the IRFU running everything and the IRFU calling the shots for everybody and there'd be uproar. But it's okay because, they're new to the league or I don't know what the story is. But it's tough to look at that. It's tough to look and say, how is that fair to have that kind of a run of home games? But they do a lot of traveling and that's got to be a part of it. So you got to take the good with the bad. Also, though, the idea that Glasgow still have to play Zebre twice is a little bit galling. I'd love to be playing Dragons twice in the next 4 weeks. That'd be great. But we're not. And the teams we have, look, I can't see. I'm looking for 15 points out of those four games. And I think the team who will probably make that most difficult will probably be Connacht. Based on current form and the idea that I don't know what it is when Connacht come to us. They are just so much more up for it to play against us than they might be for other teams. There's a real psychology in there of let's beat these bastards and show them what for. So I'm really looking forward to that game because I know
there's every
it's
possibility
be
they'll
game.
Still have a top eight chance when they do come to the RDS in that round as well.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. They've a decent run ahead of them, so they've a really good shout. They've got the flip side of what Bulls have. They've got three away games in their last four. It's a bit tough to have to face into. As you said, you can't rule out Munster. Glasgow are only 1 point behind, and we'll expect that after this weekend, Glasgow could be top of the table. Very realistically, could be top of the table and us second. It'll be interesting to see, can the Lions maintain the quality they presented yesterday? When Munster come, it'll be a tough ask for Munster if Lions can. But psychologically, that's a hard thing. And then, say, having three home games, the positive there is that Glasgow are one and Benetton are another. Benetton are only 4 points behind them and Glasgow are only 7 points ahead. So there's a real chance for points to be taken off Glasgow and Bulls to really get up the table if they can make the most out of those couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, just to clear up what you were saying, like a lot of people say if it happened with the IRFU, a lot of people would say it was a conspiracy. And that is exactly what people would be saying if we had multiple home games in the final rounds or if we got to play one of the weaker teams home and away with four matches left. But I mean, that's not to take away it's from the fact as well that it's the way the league is set up. It's five nations, two hemispheres. Playing from September to May, there's multiple reasons that we play home and away against the provinces, and we only play all the other teams once, and that goes the same for the Welsh teams, it goes the same for the South African teams, and then of course with only two Scots and two Italians, they ended up together in one kind of grouping, and they play each other home and away. That's the way it works out. And like I say, we're not complaining about that here. We're just, like we say, we're saying if that it was the flip side, there'd be a lot of people thinking.
If it was the other way around, there would be complaints.
Absolutely.
I understand how it is. I understand why it is. I wouldn't mind us having our South African tour a little earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Next year, this is the second year in a row, maybe is it the third year in a row, that we're going down very, very late in the year. It'd be nice to get it over and done with early and be building from there and not have that big trek to do at the end of the year when you're fighting on two fronts. Because we are the only team in that top four fighting on two fronts. We're the only team with one eye on a semi-final in Croke Park in 2 weeks. And beyond that, we'll be the, I really, really hope we'll be a team with one eye on another knockout game then as well. No guarantees of that. Northampton have a big say in whether that happens or not. But we are the only team. And I think in fairness to Benetton as well, they've got the same predicament. You know, they're looking at playing Ulster and Bulls and Edinburgh with one eye on a Challenge Cup semi-final as well. So you've said it before about, you know, blocks for this competition and a block for that competition. There's a lot to be said for not having, you know, for being able to look at a trip to South Africa and saying, yeah, let's send these guys, because they haven't been in the last 2 years to South Africa. Let's send these guys and not have them worrying about what's happening in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, and Rich, while we're on that subject of Leinster's kind of age-old problem of being in two big trophies at this stage of the year. I mean, there's been a lot of debate over the sides that we've selected for matches because of the way that the season comes to an end. I mean, how do we manage the squad, between now and the end of the season? Okay, we've got a certain bunch of players out in South Africa now, so we're not going to be adding to that. But when they come back, we're going to be picking a obviously our strongest team to play Northampton at Croker. But then we've got the run-in. I think if there is the final for us, that's in there as well. How do we from then on? How do we select our teams going to the end of the season? And do we stay strong, or do the Scott Penny team that's gotten us through the URC? Do we keep that in the URC? Like what way do you think we should work that?
It's extremely difficult. It's, you know, after the disappointment last year, I thought we need to focus on, we've consistently, and now we have to say consistently, over the past 3 or 4 years, we've lost both competitions because we went for both competitions. We prioritized, and we will always prioritize, the Champions Cup, which is the more prestigious of the two competitions. And that is a fact. That is not me saying it. That is true. And how do you manage that? It's very difficult. You know, you say we send a team on this mini tour to South Africa. It also means that our first team won't have touched the ball in anger in 3 weeks. And then all of a sudden you're playing Northampton in a semi-final of the Champions Cup, whereas Northampton will have been playing regularly for the past 3 weeks. Was there a case to be made for having sent a stronger team to South Africa, and with the concomitant risk of injury and fatigue, obviously, from the travel? You know, I know they didn't make much of a song and dance of it, but La Rochelle had been traveling mightily to and from South Africa before they faced us. So it does have an impact. Obviously, it has an impact. Just look at the way we didn't start yesterday's game. It's a very difficult one. Yes, we got thumped yesterday. Yes, we might very well get thumped against the Stormers. But I think the safer option is the way that Leo and co. are playing their hand. It's about sending these guys out with a sprinkling of more mature players who admittedly yesterday didn't bring their experience to the fore. But they have done in the past. You know, we've gone to South Africa in the past on these mini tours and come back with seven match points. So, you know, they haven't been all doom and gloom. It's just on this occasion, yesterday, we had 80 minutes, which are best left, you know, in the deepest, darkest recesses of the Mariana Trench. But, you know, other than that, they have these trips haven't been so bad. So So yes, having given it a great deal of thought, because I have done, I think we have the right mix. But like everything else, these things have consequences. You're reserving your best players for the big match in Croker. So then you're running the risk of match fitness for those guys on the one hand and rustiness on the one hand. But that, you know, even that is tempered because you've seen some of these guys coming back from having been out for months and they just slot in seamlessly. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I'm sure they'll hit the ground running in a couple of weeks' time. And then there's the other thing where the guys you send out on these mini tours, they may get thumped. Yes, they may not gain what you may wish them to gain, which is the experience that of playing in an Ellis Park in Cape Town. But it's a very difficult one. But you know, having given it and mulled over this for quite some time, I think that Leo is erring on the side of caution, and I think he's got it right. Yes, we haven't won the bloody Champions Cup for the last 2 years, and we lost one by 3 points or 2 points, and then the other one by 1 point. But you know, that happens. The other team will always get a vote in those matches. Shit happens. We lost far worse against Saracens a few years ago. But we also won in Bilbao. If it was easy to win, then teams would have about 20 stars on their crests. But this isn't an easy competition to win at all. And the final thing I will say is that if you had told me at the beginning of the season that in a season where we have a brand new coach with a brand new defensive system, with the loss in personnel of a Stuart Lancaster, with the loss in personnel of a Johnny Sexton, you know, that is a team in transition, whether we like it or whether we don't. The fact that we are competing on both fronts, the fact that we are in a semi-final with a very good chance, because we're playing at home, of getting to yet another Champions Cup final, whether we win or lose, if you'd given that to me at the beginning of the season, I would have bitten your hand off. Because I honestly, and I quite happily admit to that, quite honestly, not that I've written this season off, not by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought, you know, we'll get deep into both competitions, but, you know, all these things, all this crap that's happening at the time, I think we'll start faltering at some stage. But truth be told, I'm quite happily being proved wrong, and long may I be proved wrong, even more so in May.
Fingers crossed. Connor? Indeed.
Yeah, look, it's tough. As Rich says, it's tough to manage the balance, but I think the lads are getting it right. I think we're where we want to be at this point in the season. You know, we're still top of the table. Yes, there's four games to go. Yes, there are other teams who would be very happily trying to knock us off our perch. Yes, Northampton will want to come and cause a big upset in 2 weeks' time, but we're where we want to be. And, you know, as Rich says, even in spite of who's not there anymore, we're where we want to be. So, you know, onwards and upwards from the shockingest and worstest of defeats and terriblest match. I mean, we talk about the shitty quarter. I got the shitty half. That's for definite. I didn't even get to talk about a proper Leinster try. Like I say, we're pointing in the right direction. Let's see what we can do against Stormers next week.
Absolutely. Well, listen, that's brilliant, lads. We're going to leave it there. Many thanks, guys, for coming on and bravely going over that match and a bit more besides. Thanks to Connor and Rich for joining me. Hope to have you both on again soon. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, guys.
As for our next batch of Harp, and look out for our 80-plus column during the week, then we turn our attention to Leinster's second match on this South African tour. We'll have a preview of our match against the Stormers on Friday, and we'll be recording the wrap pod on Sunday evening. As ever, keep up with our content at harpandrugby.com and across our social media channels. The links are in the program notes. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.